meeting in order. Senator Duffin, Adam Jones, and Fisher in attendance. First item would be Senate Bill 464, requiring some schools to have sloped roofs. Senator Zorro, it's your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Senator Zorro. I represent Senate District 10. And I have introduced this measure to avert possible or potential injury to students and the damage to schools resulting in structural failure of flat roofs. The past year, two flat roof schools in my district have suffered extensive damage and one resulting in a total collapse. Last year, we're all aware that the community of Alucnagate, the school roof did collapse, and we were fortunate there that there were no fatalities. There were some injuries, but there were no fatalities. And the concern that I have there with the amount of snowfall in and around Alaska, and particularly in rural areas, that the flat roofs just do not seem to meet the, I don't want to say the needs, because it's difficult to identify or define what needs are, but it certainly doesn't appear to meet the concerns of the local people. And many of the people in rural areas, when they look at the architectural designs and actually see the building being constructed, will comment there that these flat roofs are just not going to work. But regardless of their objections, they are continuously built. And I know that probably one of the factors is the cost factor. And it may be cheaper. I'd have no idea what the difference is between a slope roof and a flat roof in terms of cost. But it certainly may be less expensive at the beginning to put in a flat roof, but the overall and long-term costs of that building continue. With a flat roof, you have nothing but, you have snow buildup there, you've got water buildup, and you have seepage. You can go into a lot of these schools and that have flat roofs, and there isn't probably any of the buildings around that do not have any type of water stain damage on their ceilings. And all that usually comes in as a result of the flat roof being there. I don't have any real backup material, just the evidence that we have presented to you previously in regards to the Alucnagate School and the Dellingham School. It is interesting to note, Mr. Chairman, that in your district, the snow collapsed a fire station roof in Nikiski just this year. And it did so here again. This was, I understand, a flat roof situation. So it's not something that just only affects schools. So we are, at least I am, very much concerned, particularly in rural areas, and I'm not trying to say that we need to be different or treated any differently out in rural areas, but knowing the cost of building and repairing buildings, it's just, I think it's preventative action if we take care of it at the beginning. And I put in there a figure there with a population of 10,000 or less that if you build a school in those communities that they have to have a slope roof. That's just an arbitrary figure. If you want to add, I don't think it should be any less than that. If you want to add to it, entirely up to you.
Yeah, we went into some finance. You're talking about a city as being a community, or a borough as being a community, or a village as being a community. That's not what you were going to ask, but Senator Jones.
That's exactly just what I asked.
Senator Jones,
okay.
Senator,
I had that question.
Senator Zorro, by community, do you mean a borough or a city? Or
by a community, I would limit it just to the physical area there, where the people reside in a small nucleus area.
So forth mounted at
land. And using,
for example, in Ketchikan borough, we have Saxman inside the borough. It's a community inside the boroughs. Yeah, maybe a couple thousand, well, 1,000 people maybe.
If it were to be identified, I would suspect by the community regional affairs as a community of X number of people, less than 10,000. Yes, any schools built within that area, that community of Saxman, would then have to have a slope roof.
Then if you built one inside the city has less than 10,000. The city of Ketchikan has less than 10,000. The total borough is 14,000. But if you take the city itself, it's less than 10,000.
You may want to.
So how do you address that?
You may want to consider population of the school
district
instead of the, yeah, how many kids are attending. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe there's another way. I mean,
I don't know if this is a good idea or not to set architectural standards, but if it's good for a city of 9,999, why isn't it good for a community of 10,001? Why do we have a urban exemption on this statute? I mean, we're kind of going backwards from the rural exemption to an urban exemption. Why don't we just say a new public school that is built must have a roof that is full faculty to prevent accumulation of snow, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, is there a reason why the urban areas shouldn't comply with this?
Mr. Chairman, I just picked a figure out arbitrarily. I had no idea. If you wanna just pull in all schools built have to have school roofs, that's fine with me. I would rather see something, but I know, Mr. Chairman, there that in some areas that
we will look like Stanford.
Particularly where you have materials available to repair a building right away, and you want to look like Stanford, that's fine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's worth, if this is worth doing, I think it's worth doing statewide, and maybe Mr. Hall or someone from the Department of Education.
They're anxious, but I can see they want to come up.
Sloped roofs are important probably for all over.
Just point of information.
The last school that was built in Ketchikan, sloped roof, North Point Higgins School.
Does it leak this?
Not that I know of.
Why is asbestos in it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problems. If the committee would like to just go with slope roofs with all schools, that's absolutely fine with me. Safety measure more than anything else. And I know there that in some of the communities that I represent, people are concerned about what happens architecturally out there, and they try to have some input into it. And I'm sorry, but you live in Iggy Ogic here, and you don't know anything about design. This is going to have a flat roof whether you like it or not. And so 10 years from now, the people in Iggy Ogic there are trying to drag their kids out from the gymnasium that has collapsed on them.
So I would assume the architect has liability, but if they're already going out of the state, you probably get nothing. You had mentioned earlier about a fire company in my district. I'd like to pass on to you. I believe that it was done without an architect, and the local boys thought that they could put it up better. So it didn't work with the local boys.
But that was a flat roof.
I guess you could say it might have been.
After snow collapse, but prior to that was fixed.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, you want to come up and see what the department's thinking is? Senator Zarki may stay with us.
Chairman, I've got two other meetings I need to go.
You got to stay with me.
I was going to get the bill moving if you're not here to.
I can stay for a few minutes.
This is a bad time. We get early this time of the day. It's almost like finance in the morning.
I look at all this.
Go ahead, Steve.
Can I wait until Senator Zarf leaves?
Oh, and the cost are
we? Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Hill, Department of Education. I think this is a great idea. In looking at the request for state aid over the past few years, think for a moment of the number of roof replacements, roof repairs, water damage, not to mention those that have actually collapsed. And it seems to me that there's a real fear on the part of a lot of educators to tell architects what to do or engineers what to do. If you look around at what's happened as a result of them having their own way, it hasn't been all that great a track record with some of these roofs. And frankly, I agree with Senator Duncan. If it's good for a community of 50, it ought to be just as good for a community of 50,000. It seems to me that the key notion here is not the notion of a sloped roof, but simply a roof that is somehow designed so that it prevents an accumulation of snow and ice. That's what causes most of the damage, as I understand it. If there's another way to do it, that's fine, but it seems to me that we run a real fear and danger of injuring a lot of public school youngsters in this state by continuing the practice of building flat roofs in areas where there's a tremendous snow buildup.
You had a statistic, Steve, showing, going back over the years, where we had to go back and replace the roof or whatever, whether it was a pitched roof or whether it was flat.
I do not, Mr. Chairman.
Would it take a lot of work to come up with that?
I don't think so. I'll be glad to answer it.
Mr. Chairman,
on a pitched roof, have you ever seen roofs where they have valleys? I mean, where you have a corner, you change direction, and you have a valley. You get a real buildup of snow in the valleys. I want to tell you, that can be just as dangerous as a flat roof. You have to get up and shovel snow at some point or another out there, and no one has a village or a city or where we are. So I don't know what the safety factor is built into a pitched roof and all those things, but I'm telling you, at one point in time, you have to up shovel snow.
Fact. Well, Mr. Chairman, again, I think the key notion is a roof that prevents an accumulation of snow to the extent that's possible. Now, like Senator Jones, I've seen buildings with pitched roofs that had pockets where the snow built up. Well, it wouldn't take much for an architect or working with the appropriate expertise to figure out how to avoid those anomalies in the roof structure. And even if there were instances where sloped roofs resulted in a buildup of snow, certainly those instances would be an improvement over flat roofs where there's a virtual guarantee that there will be a buildup. I was just talking with Dr. Antonin, and apparently the Elecnagate School not only had a flat roof, but a 3-foot parapet. So in addition to designing it so that it's a wall that sticks up above the roof so the snow can't blow off. Now that, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that there's a basic flaw in that concept.
Well, why do you have it there?
Aesthetics.
Yeah. 1% of the art. That's what the art program probably
has. No, go ahead.
You just said that was
Alice. I saw Representative.
That's all I have to say, Mr. Chair. I'd like to hear what the architects have to say about it.
Yeah. We don't have any architects here today. But let me ask you, though, have any of the buildings been recently constructed buildings, say, within the last 5 years?
Yep. The Lechner
Gate. Was not.
Okay, where's the architect's liability? Is he out of business and gone already, or are we trying to... Come on up. Excuse me, we ought to see what we can recover from the architect.
Mr. Chairman,
Steve, before you go, could you get us go back and kind of look and see if you can take the roof, those kind of things that we had to pay money for roofs and all that, and give us some ideas where they were flat pitched and
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, we should know, should we know how much more it's going to cost to do this, or is there? I mean, that doesn't matter. It's a safety issue. I realize this.
I'll try to find out from architects, but or estimators.
They might have like North Point Higgins, the difference between a flat roof and the way they went.
I will get that information
better. Yeah, somewhere online you're going to need it.
Right. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Antonin, Department of Education. I also support this bill. As a superintendent, I think flat roofs were the bane of my existence over a 17-year period, culminating in the collapse of a roof in Elecnagate. Answer your question directly. The architect had a liability. His liability insurance was part of the total insurance payment to the district. In that particular case, there was also some construction problems involved, and there was a settlement with the district with the contracting company. I will also get for you the districts in this particular heavy snow load year who are now paying to have roof shoveled. I was just talking with Superintendent Leith in Nenana, and he was indicating that they had probably spent $2,000 to $3,000 at $10 an hour plus shoveling that roof. Down at Valdez, they've been paying out substantially more this year.
Yeah. And in Valdez, you know, where you get 20 feet of snow or something, it's understandable. I don't care what you put up, you're going to have a hard time unless you put heating coils in the roof or something that always keeps it warm as the snow comes down, it melts and runs off, and I don't know, maybe that's something we can do. But what we'll do is we'll take this up again Wednesday and get some of the information from the department. And Senator Jones has a good point. Is there anybody in the department that can give us an idea of the differences of cost between pitched versus flat? Another possibility may be a committee substitute where we say the architect or the district shall have a pitched roof unless somehow covered differently by the architect who designs it differently. So that he's got a little extra liability if he does put a flat roof up there and the same as he does flat. Senator Jones.
Chairman, you know, if we do pass this, I know there's our schools out there that are in the process of being designed and have some cost estimates and that. I don't know when's the effective date. Right?
It's immediate. If a contract with a construction school has been entered into before the effective date of this act, it would be reliable.
Well, it's still in there to design and construct and they're going out for bonds and all those things at this time. There isn't a contract yet, but they need to know if they have to sort of pitch a roof on it, it's going to change the cost of that school maybe dramatically.
Chairman, part of the reason, I think, reasoning behind flat roofs in the past is that you could then, if those roofs didn't cost as much, and you could put more interior space in. In other words, in a flat amount grant, they would try to put the money in interior space and not into the roof. The long-term maintenance costs sometimes, however, outweigh all the other factors involved.
But we still need to know, and these school districts need to know as soon as possible. But it's gonna be, they might change the whole design of the building.
I don't know if there's a school in this area that's got a shoulder roof. I think they're all flat.
I haven't looked it up.
Just trying to think.
They're all flat and catch hanks, so no point out again.
I don't know what that means. The fact that's the way they build schools, I guess, right? I would imagine when you get a big school with a large area, it's pretty hard to put a pitch roof on. I may be wrong. I mean, my God, you'd have to have such a, even for a small slope, if you're going to go just a single.
Well, I'll tell you, you'll have snow removal because you'll be picking it up off the ground just to get inside.
Yeah. Well, we'll take it up again Wednesday, and maybe we can work something. Maybe there is another way to indicate that they shall be pitched unless it's, and I don't know what that would be, but it forces a special look at.
Just one point about the electric roof. I made a call back there, and this year is extremely heavy snow load, and we couldn't put much of a pitch on that particular roof because it stood up so high. In other words, we had to go with a lower pitch, or otherwise your wind factor would have been so great. But they said it's shedding snow very well, and one of the factors is the roofing material you use now, the Teflon-coated metal roofs. A snowflake will hardly stick to it. And so in terms of new technology, I think it's improved the potential to shed snow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have a case in our building that's really screwy. It was designed that the snow would slide off, and some local assembly person said, you know what we need, because of the snow sliding off and hitting kids, we need to stick those little things on the roof, which they did. Well, it stopped the snow, and it didn't slide off, but it went in. And the architect's saying, you altered the plan, so he's not accountable. So there you go. Anybody else in the general public that wants to give any testimony to Senate Bill 464? With that, then we'll hold the bill and see if we can't come up with something on Wednesday. Before us now, we'll move right into Senate Bill 423. It's an accolade to misconduct involving possession of a weapon was in violation of a domestic violence restraining order, and Senator Pierce is the prime sponsor, and she'll be with us momentarily. So we will take about a 3-minute recess. We are back in session. Back in
Sorry.
Meeting, so. Okay, Senator Pierce.
Oh, I don't even know my bill number. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record.
Good start.
I am Senator Drew Pierce, representing Senate District G, Anchorage, that is Spinard, Turnagain, Sand Lake. And you have before you today Senate Bill, I'm looking at the House Bill, Senate Bill 423. At the moment, unfortunately, the rate of family violence in Alaska is very high. For instance, in 1988, 43% of all homicides were family violence homicides, while over 60% involved the use of a gun. A study by the Abuse Prevention Project in the municipality of Anchorage covered the period of 1986 through 88. The study reviewed domestic violence restraining orders filed over a 6-month period. They found that 65% of the alleged perpetrators had access to a gun. Interviews with victims revealed that 20% reported that earlier abuse in the relationship had included threats with a deadly weapon, and 7% reported physical damage from a weapon. The bill that I've introduced raises the penalty for misconduct involving possession of a weapon by a person in violation of a domestic violence restraining order. Currently, the offense constitutes assault in the fourth degree, which is a Class A misdemeanor. This bill raises this offense to assault in the third degree, a Class C felony. The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault fully supports this change, as does the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And I believe we have other people here to testify. I can attempt to answer any questions that you have.
You know, somebody offered a Hess fiscal note, but I think we'll leave it off.
A Hess fiscal note, which was what?
Any questions of Senator Pierce? You may stay there if you want.
Okay.
Representative Hanley, how about you?
you going next, and that way you can get on with your other duties, too.
Did you want me to testify now?
Right now, yes. Senator Pierce, we don't have any questions of Senator Pierce.
You're tired of listening to me.
We're not on a teleconference.
Okay.
See there, now you did that for nothing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Hanley. I represent District 9. I, too, am interested in this bill. I have introduced an identical bill, House Bill 340, and which is presently in House has. I appreciate your having this hearing. This particular problem was brought to my attention by Sergeant Grimes, who is he's with the Violent Crimes Unit in the Anchorage Police Department. I really believe that making this particular crime a felony instead of a misdemeanor has the potential of saving lives. It's been impressed upon me that if indeed the Committee on Domestic Violence, or if indeed we change the wording under writ to include the terminology and let the person know that a violation of this domestic violence writ is a felony, that in itself would serve as one deterrent, because the threat of being guilty of a felony is much greater than that of a misdemeanor. The other thing that's been explained to me is that a judge, when a person is brought in for a violation of this particular crime, is very reluctant, if not would be criticized for retaining a person who is guilty of a misdemeanor. A person guilty of a felony, which this bill would make this particular crime a felony, might be able to keep him or detain him or put him in jail for at least a night, for a cooling off period. And perhaps that cooling off period would prevent him from then using that weapon beat up a person or to murder a person. And I think that some of the statistics you have included with the bill, spousal abuse results in more injuries that require medical treatment than rape, auto accidents, and muggings combined. We have some pretty dismal statistics that associated with domestic violence. So I really think that making this particular, the violation of a domestic violence writ, making it a Class C felony instead of a misdemeanor, would have the potential of perhaps saving a couple of lives, many lives, maybe over a period of time. A relatively simple, straightforward bill that I think is important.
Any questions? Thank you. Moriarty?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lori Otto. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And I apologize, I had to step out for a minute, so if I repeat something that somebody else has already said, I'm not trying to bore you. The department does support this bill. One of the reasons is that under existing law, somebody who violates a domestic violence order, in other words, a judge has ordered them not to go someplace or not to have contact with somebody, somebody who violates one of those orders is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor, which means that when they're taken before the magistrate, they're usually released on bail at that time. The police, I believe, originally contacted Representative Hanley, and then later Senator Pierce agreed to sponsor the bill. And they said, look, you know, we go to these domestic violence, we respond to situations all the time where people are violating domestic violence orders and they have weapons in their possession, and we think it's crazy that we arrest them, we take them to the magistrate, and then they get right back out when they're still angry and they're still under whatever kind of emotional influence that caused them to violate the judge's order to begin with. And they felt like I agree with them, that if the offense were a felony, that people are going to be held in jail at least overnight until they get into court the next day, and usually people have the time to calm down and the situation's de-escalated, and we're not going to have the kind of violence that we see resulting in the large number of domestic homicides. One of the reasons that the police feel as strongly about it as they do is that for police officers, one of the most dangerous situations that they can go into is a domestic violence situation where everybody is very emotional and very upset. When somebody has a weapon, it obviously puts the police at a great amount of risk of injury. So we support the law enforcement community as well as the bill.
Any questions? Thank you.
Cindy Smith?
For the record, my name is Cindy Smith. I'm the director of the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which is a membership organization composed of 23 programs around the state that serve victims and their families. Some of The points that I would have made have already been touched on. I think the thing that I want to say is that in our work with victims and perpetrators, we regularly perform lethality assessments to try to assess the immediate or ongoing threats to a victim's physical safety. Batterer's disregard of police and court orders increases the potential for lethality just dramatically, as does threats of harm, access to weapons, and any kind of sort of disregard of institutions. And in cases such as these, when a batterer has been ordered away from a victim and violates that order while in possession of a deadly weapon, represent a very lethal situation, and we feel it should carry greater penalties. Not only because the penalties give batterers greater incentive to respect such orders, but it also provides greater safety to victims. When violators are arrested, greater scrutiny of offenders will be exercised in felony cases, which includes bail provision, sentencing, and probation supervision. So we really urge your support for this bill. I think it's real important.
Any questions?
Okay, thank you. Sherry Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Gall. I represent the Alaska Women's Lobby, and we're happy to join with the Network on Domestic Violence and the Anchorage Police Department in supporting this legislation. We do think that it will add a factor of safety for people in these situations.
Any questions? Thank you. Barbara has a note here. If questions, apparently we don't have any questions.
Okay. I just want you to know that the Department of Public Safety and the Council also supports this bill.
Is there anybody else in the general public that wants to give testimony? Okay, the public hearing is closed with the wish of the committee. Senator Duncan?
I move the bill.
Individual recommendation. Any objections? No objections. The bill is moved.
Thank
that
you.
Concludes our meeting.
Wow. Yeah.